buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison and Dawson Wise joining you on a hump day. People still call it hump day?
Yeah.
Wednesday?
Yeah.
Is that because of the Geico commercial? Is that why it's called
that? That's why I've done it. Yeah.
I've always wondered that. Literally, as I was thinking about what I was going to say, I was like, I'm going to say hump day. But does it come from the Geico commercial, or did people call it hump day?
I think people called it that before that. That's why they made the Geico commercial.
Okay. I know. Yeah. Okay. I didn't know people called it hump day before that. Anyway, we will not be talking about why hump day is called hump day in this hour. We will be covering the NFL is thinking about extending the regular season. We'll debate that.
Again.
That idea. Also in the news with Dawson Wise, as always, later on in the hour. But let's dive into this. NFL extending the NFL season. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell raised eyebrows during draft weekend when he floated the idea of an 18-game regular season and shortened postseason, a change that would require a good deal of concessions by NFL owners to convince players to agree. Such a modification, the increase from 17 to 18 games and reduction from 3 preseason contests to 2, is far imminent because of wording in the current collective bargaining agreement, which runs through 2030, and because NFL owners and NFL Players Association leaders haven't even engaged in discussions on the matter, according to two people briefed on this situation. There's a lot of process that will have to happen. The people spoke on a condition of this because of the premature nature of such discussions. Now, Goodell talked about this on Pat McAfee's show on ESPN. Talk about a show that's wired up and better on mute. He said, quote, "I think we're good at 17 games now. But listen, we're looking at how we should continue. I'm not a fan of the preseason. The reality is I'd rather replace preseason games with a regular season game any day. That's just picking quality. If we get to 18-2, that's not an unreasonable thing." So interesting show for Roger Goodell to go on and talk about this matter with. I think Pat McAfee is the most unserious person on TV to talk about possibly expanding the NFL season and shortening the preseason. I don't think they should expand this, and we'll dive more into the levels of this discussion as we continue, but I don't really see the need for it. You know, you just extended it to 17 games, what, 2-3 years ago?
Something like that.
And I think that was, you know, okay, 17 games, that's fine. But what's the difference between an 18th game and a 17th game? You know, I guess more opportunities for a playoff team a team to advance to the playoffs. On the other side, more opportunity for injury. We saw 63 different starting quarterbacks this season in the NFL. That number was a significant increase. We know that injuries are a part of the game. Concussions are a part of the game. So the NFL, I get the revenue side of this. Obviously, you put out more games, you can sell more ticket packages, you can sell more TV packages. But on the other side, if you've been promoting safety and promoting that you care about the players, then what's the sense of adding an 18th game of the season, making teams travel for an 18th week of the season, so, you know, allowing these players to be subjective to injury for an 18th game in a season, when in reality there's no difference between 17 and 18, in my opinion? I don't think they should add one. Dawson?
Realistically, probably not. 16 was already hard on the players. 17 harder still, and now you want to go to 18. It raises the question. We talked about a couple weeks back, we talked about that new plan to want to expand the playoffs from 12 to 14.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of said, number one, why this early? Because you just changed it. Now, granted, a little bit more extreme in college football where you haven't even seen the 12-game playoff.
Yeah.
But also, where does this stop? How far do we go? Do we go to 18, 19, 22? Like, how many games are we going to have? Because, you know, if you're already going towards 18, I mean, how far are we going to go? How many games do we get to before we decide we've had enough? 18 feels a little bit ludicrous to me. I will say, I'll give him credit. I do see where he's coming from on the preseason. I'm not into the preseason either. The starters aren't getting a ton of reps. They'll maybe start one game. And then from there, you're giving your young guys a chance. You're giving your depth guys a chance. And I hate to take away that opportunity, but there's no draw for the preseason. There's no, there's nothing begging me to watch a preseason game unless you have a prospect like some of these guys do. You know, like, for example, when Kyler Murray came into the NFL and I wanted to watch Kyler Murray, okay. Yeah. When you want to watch Drake May or Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams or one of these quarterbacks, okay, I get it. But other than that, there's not really a draw for the preseason. You're probably going to have to work in some serious concessions, too. I said a second bye week at least because, 18 games with one bye week, really? It's not going to fly with the players or the NFLPA. So to get them on board, you're going to want something built in. So then if you want to go from 18 to 19, then you'd have something built in. I don't think that's going to work personally.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of the preseason either. I just think it's more kind of like, oh, football's back. But,
it's kind of back.
In the second quarter, we've got to watch Billy Bob Joe from West Virginia Tech
State.
Last
year's a good example. Sorry to cut you off.
No,
last year's a good example. The Arizona Cardinals, you're not going to believe this. The Arizona Cardinals started Jarrett Garantano in a preseason game against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
That should say enough about the preseason.
Yeah. Well, it's more of – the preseason's more like a history lesson of – who you knew from college or who you know that's bounced around the league that's playing in a preseason
game. Jarrett Garantano.
Yeah, Jarrett Garantano. and, I mean, seriously, they bring these guys out of the woodwork. Jeff Driscoll was another Cardinals guy that was on the roster hanging around. I remember him. But, yeah, the preseason has never really made a ton of sense to me. I understand, like, a game to kind of get your feet under you. Two games, I can understand. Three just kind of seems excessive because we have 3 weeks of preseason that no one cares about. And half of them you can't even really watch unless it's on NFL Network or it's on the local stream and your region. So I understand cutting down the preseason, but extending the regular season, making it 18, two bye weeks, I'm not a big fan of, TBH. Or, gosh, to be honest. Hey, talk about some millennials talking, TBH. But to be honest, I'm not a big fan of the two bye weeks because, I don't know, as a fan, I don't want to have 2 weeks out of the year I can't watch my team. I've already got one, right? But, again, I think it goes back to the injuries and what you are subjecting your players to. Traveling a lot more. More games, more practices, more risk to run for injury. My ideal scenario would be expand the postseason by adding, one more spot in each conference, kind of doing like a play-in game, right? I know there's wild card weekend, but like a play-in game between the seventh and eighth teams and see who plays the number one team, right? Something like that. I could get around that because it's football that matters. 18th game of the year, a lot of the shakeup of the playoffs is already kind of done. Like, you kind of know whether you're making the playoffs or not, so you're kind of watering down the product even more then. So that if you want to make an 18th week, just extend the playoffs, in my opinion. I think that is in more intriguing football, more on the line. I mean, who the hell gives a rip about week 18? When, you could have a playoff game that matters, that means something, right?
Right.
There is strict wording in the current CBA that would prevent an extended regular season before the expiration of the 2030 deal. Quote, the league, and this comes from the current CBA, I should say, the league and or club shall not increase the number of regular season games per club to 18 or more games, the line in the CBA states. So to extend the season, the NFL owners would have to request a meeting with the NFLPA leadership to hold discussions about ripping up the current CBA, hammering down a new agreement, hammering down a new CBA, and then you can go to the process of, okay, now we can look into having an 18-game season. I think it's a lot of hard work for little outcome, for little substance. I think the likelihood of this is very – very slim, because if they're meeting with the players, the guys that have to go through all this, I don't see a likelihood that that the players are like, yeah, let's add another game. Yeah, let's add another regular season game. I don't think they're getting up for that.
Not likely anytime soon, anyway. We're not far enough removed from going to 17 games for me to feel like they would immediately go back into meetings to go to 18 games. It's a big change as it is to go to 17. It's going to be a while out even if it happens, which I don't think it's going to. It takes a ton of time, even once you start discussing, to establish a new CBA. They'd have to probably redo the CBA, I would think.
Yeah.
Look at the past instances of this. Look at the strikes and the lockouts that are months on end with no sports because you're trying to renegotiate the CBA. We'd be looking at something like that again because, again, you'd be taking the one you have now, ripping it up and wanting to redo it. By the way, it's already the month of May. Football starts in September. So if you wanted to do it this year, that's out the window. It just takes a ton of time to get these kinds of things resolved because now you have to move everything around. It's not just redoing one set of words to get you to modify the schedule. Then everyone's going to want to renegotiate everything. Mm-hmm. They're going to want to renegotiate everything else in the CBA along with the little wording to get the scheduling. It's too much time commitment. Too much time commitment this close to the last time you did this to justify it for me.
And talking about from a player's perspective, I think, you know, they would be more willing to take games off. I think they would hesitate the idea of having to play another game, knowing that, you know, this is the NFL. Any given day you step on the field, you have the opportunity to risk injury. So I think those are the cons. You know, you'll have more sit-outs. You'll have more injuries. You might have guys kind of taking maybe games off in a sense, knowing that, okay, we play the Commanders this week. All right, well, you know, we've got 18 games now. We can afford to lose one or afford to take a game off. So I think you're watering down the product, the very similar argument I had with the college football playoff, as you mentioned. You're watering down the top 12 teams. Why extend it to 14 when you're just watering it down even more? Four teams were the best four. Moving it to 12, I understand, because there's been a ton of controversy. But we haven't even seen what the 12 team looks like. We've only seen a couple of years of the 17 regular season games in the NFL. I think you further water down the product, and we see in the NBA, these guys play 82 games a night. Half of them they don't give a rip about. So the NFL, I think, does a really good job of keeping their season concrete and to where the teams care about each game. Every game matters. The more games you add on, the less intensity, the less urgency. I think the players would look at it from that perspective, and I think, again, it's not a smart move.
I don't see the players agreeing with it because they're already committed to this 18-week regular season and also agreed to expand the postseason once already. Remember, it used to be six teams
yes,
in each conference.
Yes.
They already moved it to seven and went to 17 regular season games. They're not going to want to go to 18 games and then try to play an extra round of football because of the new wild card format.
Yeah.
You know, the season's already gotten several weeks longer. All things considered, this quickly, I don't see the players being willing, okay, yeah, let's just add another regular season game. Let's play for, you know, a longer time of the year. You already play for almost 6 months. Let's just go ahead and add a week on.
Yeah.
I don't see them doing that. If they are to agree, there'd be some negotiations about salaries, I'm sure, as well. You mentioned taking games off. I mentioned they want an extra game of pay. I mean, because they're going to want to renegotiate that and say, okay, we're playing an extra week, an extra couple weeks if you add in a bye week. We want a little bit of extra pay, and that's a whole different rabbit hole. Different argument.
Yeah.
And you know, they'd want that more, the more benefits because of a longer time commitment. It'd be an entirely other issue that had to be hammered out, along with the new CBA, which, again, it goes back to you'd have to redo the entire CBA and all that if discussions were to even get started on this, which I don't think they're going to.
Yeah, a lot of logistics go into it. You mentioned the pay. That's a whole other disagreement they could have. You know,
exactly.
All right, fine. You're going to make us play 18. Well, we want to increase in the salary cap. We want to increase in our wagers. Anytime money's involved, it never ends well. 865-288-3131, your number if you want to hop in and join talking the NFL, possibly extending the regular season to 18 games. Going to the safety side of it, because the NFL, I've always felt like, tries to put on a front that they're trying to make the game safer, but in reality, when you talk to former players about it, they have a totally different opinion. They're like, you know, they put this front out there that they care. In reality, they don't really put us in their best and their best, you know, peace of mind. And I think extending the season makes it less safe for the players because now you're giving them more opportunities to be injured. And from that sense, I think it is less safe for the players to make this deal. What do you say?
Yeah, I agree. Again, already added a game, already added a postseason game. I could see where it would be a little bit less safe. A few extra weeks of play that has to happen if you go to this. Now, if you add in the elimination of that preseason as well, when guys are able to kind of rotate, able to rest, get back in game shape, that provides a safety question as well because, I mean, now you have 3 weeks where you can basically, okay, I can ramp myself back up to game shape. I can get back in the groove. That's only 2 weeks. Is that enough time for you to get back into game shape? You'd basically now be playing regular season and postseason football from the end of August, assuming I would imagine that you back up the regular season instead of mm-hmm. – because, I mean, then you'd be playing the Super Bowl in like the middle of February, which mm-hmm. is – unprecedented. So I imagine you would back it up. You'd be playing from the end of August until February if you go to the Super Bowl, late January if you're going to the playoffs. That's, you know, almost 6 months of football.
Yeah.
Where you basically don't have a break. Mm-hmm. And it's all meaningful games, not to mention preseason for 2 weeks, training camp, which has basically become almost year-round at this point with all the voluntary workouts and OTAs and all the stuff mm-hmm. that happens in the offseason. Mm-hmm. It makes the schedule already more grueling. It's grueling as it is with 17. It was grueling with 16 games.
Yeah.
It's even more grueling with 17. It'd be a heck of a lot more grueling with 18. I don't think it would be a major safety issue more than, you know, we have now. But, you know, if you keep going beyond 18, like we said, if you go to 19, 20, 21, safety issues, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse the further you go.
Did you say they are allowing the helmet shells this year?
Yeah. Number one, I mean, is it going to help that much? Is my question.
I think it's aesthetically ugly.
Well, it's going to look horrible. My other side of that would be how many guys are really going to do it? Because I mean, that's a practice thing. A lot of guys, you know, it's kind of a routine. It's not something they're used to in game situations. Are that many guys really going to do it? Because I was complaining about it the other day, but then I was like, well, I don't think that many guys are going to actually wear that out on the game field. I don't see that being a very popular option.
I could see if a guy gets a concussion and then maybe.
If it's a guy with a concussion history, if it's a guy with a history of head injuries.
Yeah, but man.
Boy, Antonio Brown could have used one of those, huh?
I'd probably need three of them. I will say, I think the first guy that does it might get some, you know, chirps.
Oh, like,
literally a target on your back, on your head, I guess. I think it aesthetically looks awful. You know, the kickoff was one thing, making that thing look as ugly as it's going to be next year. And now basically put it on, you know, the big hats everyone wears, the big, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh,
that's basically what you're doing, but it's just a helmet version. I'm not a big fan of
I don't.
I get, look, I know I just, you know, argued for 15 minutes about safety, but I just think it looks terrible on TV.
For practice and training camp and things like that, where you're doing it daily and it's literally every day, just, you know, rep after rep after rep, okay. You're playing a game once a week for a few hours. Is that really going to provide a major effect? That was my question. And add on, it just does not look very good aesthetically.
Yeah. We'll have to see who the first players are to use the big hats, the big helmets next season. All right, good stuff. When we come back, we'll have In the News with Dawson Wise. Stay right here on Overtime.
At Wholesale Supply, we're more than just a plumbing, electrical, and HVAC supplier. We're your partners in success. Join our family of customers today and experience the benefits of partnering with us. Enjoy free local delivery so you can focus on what you do best, getting the job done. With wholesale pricing, you'll save big on every purchase. Plus, our fast, friendly support team is here to assist you every step of the way. Our vast selection from top manufacturers ensures you'll find everything you need all under one roof. To find a location near you, visit wholesalesupply.us for more. And remember, Wholesale Supply, open to the public.
From high school heroes to college legends, First Bank is proud to champion our local athletes. But we don't just back you on the field or on the court. We team up with customers to score the wins that grow communities. That takes better products, more accessible, flexible bankers, and the quick answers and solutions you can run with. Don't just make the switch. Make the team that champions community. First Bank. Bank local. Get more team spirit. Member FDIC.
It's baseball season, meaning summer's just around the corner, and your friends at Fan Run Radio are here to help you kick off summer right at the ballpark. Join us for our first ever fan run night at Smoky Stadium on May 30th. Besides the game with Chattanooga, there will be in-game activities, $3 beers for Thirsty Thursday, and you'll get to do it all with the Fan Run team. Also, 37 club members get free admission to the game. So keep it locked in on Fan Run Radio for more details to follow, and save the date for May 30th.
Fan Run Radio is proud to present the 37 Club, an exclusive community of the lifeblood of Fan Run Radio. You, our biggest supporters. With a membership to the 37 Club, you receive exclusive content like podcasts, blogs, and videos, giveaways, and access to exclusive merchandise and events. So join the 37 Club today by going to fanrunradio.com.
What's the difference between an ordinary EV and a Mercedes-Benz EV? The feeling. Electric is what gets you there. Mercedes-Benz is what moves you. In ways no other automaker can. Feel the freedom of the superbly versatile 7-seater EQB. Revel in the inspired, customizable comfort of the EQE sedan. Sense the brilliant intelligence of the EQE SUV. Discover the boundless capability of the EQS SUV. And luxuriate in the flagship meets spaceship magnificence of the EQS sedan. Every Mercedes-Benz electric vehicle offers the very latest MBUX voice-activated AI software, as well as remote access to a whole host of functions via the Mercedes Me Connect app. The vehicle's electric, the feeling all Mercedes, the choice all yours. Test drive a Mercedes-Benz electric today at your local dealer or learn more at mbusa.com/EQ.
I know I can't afford.
Live on a Tuesday, it's overtime. The surround sound of your car, you can hear us. We got in the news with Dawson Wise.
We'll start in the MLB tonight. Things got wild Tuesday night in Milwaukee, and I'm not talking about the Fiserv Forum. Over at American Family Insurance Field, the Brewers were hosting the Tampa Bay Rays in a midweek game that turned hostile late in the going. The top of the sixth inning, Brewers pitcher Freddy Peralta beamed Rays outfielder Jose Siri in the thigh, sparking some animosity from both dugouts, but nothing spilling onto the field. Peralta was then ejected from the game, which is a wild sequence if you haven't seen the video yet.
Yeah,
because
it
takes a while for them to toss him out of the game. He was ejected from the game for what the umpire said was an intentional hit batter of Jose Siri. The umpires believed it was in response to Siri's earlier home run. He homered in the third inning, and let's just say he admired the home run quite a bit standing in the batter's box. Brewers manager Pat Murphy also ejected in that sequence as he came out to argue his pitcher should not have been thrown out of the game for that little scuffle. But that was not the end of festivities in Milwaukee. In the eighth inning, Siri grounded out to Reese Hoskins. Reliever Abner Uribe covered first and exchanged some words with Siri as he slowly walked back to the Rays' dugout. As Siri lingered on the first baseline, Uribe walked over and threw a punch, sparking a brawl that saw the dugouts clear and the bullpens come running in as punches were thrown from both sides. As a result of both events, four total suspensions have been given out. The most severe, Uribe, he's been given a 6-game suspension for throwing the first punch. Peralta receiving a 5-game suspension. Siri received a 3-game suspension that was reduced down to 2 games after an appeal to the league. And Murphy received a 2-game suspension as well. Uribe and Peralta plan to appeal their penalties. Overall, a wild scene in Milwaukee. Another bench-clearing brawl in the MLB. This one was a lot more old school. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen the video.
I'm not watching it right now.
There's not a lot of MLB brawls that result in this kind of very, very physical brawl. Sometimes it's you know, some talking, some shoving, kind of like NBA fights sometimes where, okay, there's a couple of pushes and some foul language, but that's about the extent of it. This was, I mean, punches back and forth,
yeah.
Both guys tossed. This was old school baseball, an old school baseball fight. And it takes me back to the question I wanted to ask with this because, you know, I was thinking about some of the times we've seen in-game fights in sports, because it doesn't happen a ton, but when it does happen, it's pretty incredible. It's pretty insane to watch. Now, granted, this happens more in hockey, So I'm going to use a couple hockey examples. The most notable, the Ice Bears had a game last year where they were playing on the road in Roanoke, And I'm not sure. I can't remember what happened earlier in the game. Sparks a fight in the middle of the second period, and one of the players for the Ice Bears goes onto the opposing bench and just grabs whoever he can find. One, two, three, four guys, and just starts wailing on them. The Ice Bears bench clears. I've never seen a bench clear in hockey until that moment. Typically, you see those guys, they just, you know, they let the five guys on the ice handle it. You've seen that a ton of times. The puck drops, and all of a sudden, everybody's got a dance partner.
Mm-hmm.
But this game, the bench is clear. Had, I think 11 guys ejected between both teams. Both coaches got ejected. That was one of the wildest ones I've seen. I've been in the building for a bench-clearing brawl in hockey before and a goalie fight, which, again, doesn't happen very much.
Yeah,
fights in sports are wild. And so I did want to pose the question, not to make light of this situation, if you will, but just to ask kind of a fun question. What is the craziest in-game fight that you can remember?
It's got to be Isaiah Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
From the Pistons. I mean, that was insane. Because, well, I mean, obviously the Malice in the Palace, I think, takes the cake.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
Malice in the Palace will always take the cake. But another Pistons player, Isaiah Stewart, what was it, 2 years ago?
Something like that, yeah.
Got into it with, I don't think it was with LeBron. I know LeBron was in it, but I don't think it was initially with him. But, I mean, that went on for 3 minutes. And they walked him all the way back to the locker. Like, they were walking him to the locker room, and then he, like, made a run for it. And just, I mean they got three guys holding on to him. It was that kind of stuff is just incredible to watch, funny to watch going back. The NBA is probably where I'll pick all of mine because this is what I watch the most. And actually, hold on. Titans and Texans, what was it?
Oh, yeah.
Was it Chad Johnson?
It was Andre Johnson and Cortland Finnegan.
Andre Johnson, Cortland Finnegan. That was a fun one, too. And then Michael Crabtree.
Okay, yeah.
And
Aqib Talib.
Snatching the chain. Snatching the chain off.
Blocking him all the way to the wall off the sideline by the crowd.
So those are the ones I think of right off the bat. I've been to so many Grizzlies games. I can't pinpoint like one I've seen in person. I mean, I've seen, you know, I've been to probably 20 Grizzlies versus Warriors matchups, and there's always something that happens then. But, yeah, fights are fun for the viewer, not for the people
not
involved.
Not for the players, I guess.
But in the Brewers game, it kind of looks like Uribe just kind of turned around and said something to him.
He did.
And then walks away, and then
Siri says something back as he's walking to the dugout. They exchange, and then whatever he said, I don't know what kind of fire it lit underneath Uribe. But
what was the other MLB one?
Yasiel Puig's had a couple that have been notably.
Like, it was two. I think it was Blue Jays. Was it Blue Jays Rangers?
Blue Jays
maybe?
Rangers. It wasn't really a brawl. Oh yeah, no.
Swinging on the plate.
So the year before it was the Jose Bautista, infamous bat flip that everybody remembers.
Yes.
The next year, Rougned Odor punched Bautista so hard his glasses fell off.
Yes.
That's one of the hardest punches I've seen in sports. Period.
That's what I'm talking about.
Another one in baseball. Tim Anderson and Jose Ramirez.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where Ramirez, not a notable chippy guy, and gets up and just lands one right on the jaw.
White Sox game, right?
Yeah. Lands one on Anderson's jaw, knocks him down.
Sports fights are fun.
Sports fights are really fun. Not to make light of that situation, but sports fights are really fun.
Yeah.
Moving into a sport that loves fighting, hockey, the Nashville Predators are not dead yet. Headed into Tuesday night's game 5, the Preds found themselves down 3-1 in a winner-go-home spot on the road in Vancouver after losing both games on home ice and a heartbreaking collapse in game 4 that saw them give up a 2-goal lead and lose in overtime. Nashville needed some juice to keep the season alive, and juice is what they got in more ways than one. The Preds pulled off a 2-1 come-from-behind win that saw them score twice in quick fashion in the third period, replicating Vancouver's game-winning stretch in Game 4 and their stretch in the third period of Game 1 that both saw Vancouver score 2 goals in a very short time. The Preds did that last night. Though the Preds did not get the start they wanted, they were held in their own zone for much of the first period. They survived the period without giving up a goal, headed to the intermission still tied at 0. That story continued. As the second period came and went, power plays on both sides coming up empty, neither team able to find the back of the net. But once the game reached the third, that all changed. Early in the third period, Vancouver defenseman Nikita Zadorov threw a puck on net. It was a routine play, but it was one that Juuse Saros could not make, and the Canucks scored first to take the lead with 16 minutes to go. Once again, Nashville needed an answer. And just past the halfway point of the period, they got their answer. Mm-hmm. Captain Roman Josi crashed the net with the puck. It was a bit of a scramble sequence. It was a wild couple of moments as the puck got stuck behind goalie Artur Silov's. Then with seven, and Josi was able to actually not really poke it in. Actually, it was ironically Zadorov for mm-hmm. Vancouver that scored their goal that actually knocked the puck into his own net in a really wild sequence. Then, with 7 minutes to go, the Preds struck gold again. Defenseman Alex Carrier, his first career playoff goal. What a time to
do it.
Good
for him.
The 11th goal of his NHL career on a slap shot from the blue line. The Preds gained a 2-1 lead and then survived the late onslaught with Vancouver's net empty. No two-goal miracle this time for Vancouver.
Yeah.
And held on to take the game. The win now forces a do-or-die Game 6 back at home in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena on Friday night. That place is going to be unbelievably loud.
Got to handle business.
Yeah. As the Preds attempt to do the unthinkable, come back from down 3-1 and force a winner-take-all Game 7 in Vancouver. This look, Game 2 was, I thought, the time that the Preds kind of took control of the series, because like we say in the NBA, a series doesn't end or come in jeopardy until a home team loses. Well, then they turn around and they lose both at home. Vancouver takes control of the series. I did not know what version of Nashville we were going to get last night. We got a resilient one. They had to be.
Yeah.
They did not play a very good first period and a half. Vancouver was all over them. But they survived the storm and were able to get the goals they needed in Game 4, quite frankly, or the goals they needed in Game 3, in Game 5. And this was a gritty win. You go down 3-1, all hope is lost. You're not playing well. You've lost two, you lost two at home, completely demoralized. You come in and you take care of business, and on the road, no less, in front of what ended up being a really rowdy Vancouver crowd. Props to the Vancouver fans in their three games. They provided a really great atmosphere. This is a series changer. This says, okay, we won Game 2. That was good enough. After losing those two, you needed the response, and now you've got the response.
Mm-hmm.
And now you come home in front of what I still argue is the rowdiest playoff environment in the NHL in Nashville. You need this one. Well, literally you need this one, but also – you really could use this one after losing both at home. This is a series-changing win. You got big performances from a couple guys. You got a really nice performance from Juicy Saros, which I think you needed. He had not played his best series. I said that yesterday. Really big few stops in last night's game. Late in the game, made some massive saves. They kept you in this one, kept you in the lead. Now you return home with momentum. This is a huge win for the Preds. If they win Game 6, who knows what happens in Game 7?
Yeah,
because
spicy.
They've won 2 out of 3 in Vancouver.
Yeah.
So if you can win Game 6, who knows what happens? It's going to be a great game on Friday night. Is this a series-changing win for the Nashville Predators?
Well, yeah, definitely. You know, what we talked about yesterday was kind of coming in with that aggressive mentality of kind of spoiling what would be a series elimination game at home for Vancouver. And I think you saw that in the faceoffs, 35-22 advantage in the faceoffs for the Predators. That aggression of kind of being that spoiler, I thought they did a really good job. The second thing I was really impressed by was, I think 7:21 is when they scored the second goal.
Yeah.
From then on, in Game 4, Vancouver was able to, string a run at the very end, right? They were able to take steal one from you. Nashville was able to stay locked in, not allow Vancouver to inch back into this one like they have done in this series. Final 7:21, really locked in defensively, kept Vancouver from putting in the goal. So I thought that was really big. And again, your captain Rossi gets in there, gets a big time score. I think you had a lot of things go well for you. I think you have to replicate it at home. You lose two games at home in this series. That's where you're supposed to play the best. Really good home crowd. Will Levis, holding up the fish, and that's the kind of environment you have, and you need to make sure you feed off of it. This is a inexperienced team, ahead of schedule. You've got to feed off your home crowd now in a very big game. I think this is a winnable one for the Preds, and you take it to Game 7. You've already won 2 on the road. Who knows where this series could go? You've got to handle business at home. That should be the given. That should be the easy one.
Should be noted, a relatively inexperienced group in Vancouver as well.
Yeah.
Not a group with a ton of playoff experience yet. Feed off that as well.
Yeah.
And, you want the definition of a rocking playoff atmosphere.
Yeah.
Check out Bridgestone Arena tomorrow night for Game 6.
Yeah.
It's going to be a heck of an atmosphere. We'll do a couple previews real quick. Some NBA, NHL playoff action on tap tonight. We'll start with the Eastern Conference Game 5, Boston Celtics, Miami Heat. We talked about these games earlier in our best bets. Do want to preview them a little bit more detail before we get out of here in a little bit. Boston coming off a Game 4 win and a couple wins in Miami where the Heat looked dreadful, offensively especially. So the Heat need a rebound offensively. The Celtics got some unlikely help. Derek White had 38 points in Game 4. The Heat killer, Derek White, is not words I thought I would say in 2024, but big performance. They're going to lean on their stars. They're back at home at the Garden, looking to put this one away. Bam Adebayo had 25 for Miami in Game 4, really the lone bright spot for them in Game 4. Just was not what they needed offensively. The Celtics are starting to cook. They're starting to figure it out, I think. Now, notably without Kristaps Porzingis, obviously we've heard he's going to miss a few more games with the injury he suffered earlier in the series. He was big for them in Game 3, so we'll see how that absence affects them here in Game 5. But as we go into this game, again, some injuries for the Heat are going to hold them back. They've been holding them back for a couple weeks.
No Rozier. Yeah, no Jaime Jaquez.
Rozier, no Jimmy Butler. So you're now missing three of your key contributors. They're out of gas, in my opinion, and don't have the personnel. So the Celtics obviously looking to end the series there. The other game, Mavs Clippers. No Kawhi Leonard for L.A. Dallas coming off big performances from their two stars. They need to adjust the way they play defense. We talked about that already, but have already won a game in L.A. in this series. Now come back to Game 5. The big key, the two X-factor players are pretty obvious. It's Paul George and James Harden. If they replicate what they did in Game 4, they probably hold serve and win this game at home. If they don't, I think Dallas wins this game and probably goes up 3-2, puts the Clippers on their back foot, which is something we talked about when we were talking about the Dallas Mavericks, that they could win a first-round series against a team like the Clippers because of what the Clippers have looked like the past few weeks. A couple good games tonight in the association. You better chance to win tonight. The Heat stave off elimination. The Mavericks steal one on the road in L.A.
Better chance to win, either Heat or Mavericks. Mavericks. I mean, the Heat don't have anyone playing. No Jaime Jaquez, no Butler. Terry Rozier, if you still consider that a big-time player in 2024, just shows that this roster really needed Damian Lillard. And obviously, you're not going to be able to project who's injured. You didn't think Jimmy Butler would be injured in this series and in the playoffs. But this team is struggling because it lacks a point guard that can score. And if I'm Damian Lillard, I wish I went to Miami because I'd be in a lot better situation than I'm in Milwaukee. But going to the Mavericks, you know, you talk about your key guys and PG and PG and James Harden. Those are definitely the key guys for the Clippers. They've got to have replicable performances from what they did on Sunday. Or was it Monday? No, it was Sunday. It was Sunday, right? Yeah, it was Sunday. It was Sunday. Yeah. I was laying in bed all day. That's why.
Right.
Yeah, it was Sunday. But for the Mavericks, it's PJ Washington to me, because PJ has shot the ball well in a couple of games this series from three. In the regular season, he struggled. I think he shot like 31.2%. Wasn't great. But when he's able to knock down threes and space the defense out to where they have to respect him, and Derek Jones Jr., another guy who hit a couple of timely threes in that matchup. Because the defense wants to crash in and force the other guys to win. If Washington and Jones can hit their shots offensively, then that's where Luka and Kyrie can really have a lot of space on the floor. Defensively, PJ Washington, if that's the main assignment on Harden, he's got to do a better job of not allowing Harden to blow right by him. There were too many times in the game on Sunday, especially in the crucial moments, where I'm like, well, why is he playing at half court on Harden? I mean, he's not pulling it from half court. He's looking to foul bait, and he's looking to take it inside where he's higher efficient. Has a higher efficiency, I should say. Now, Paul George, we get an up-and-down performance from him every year, so it's tough to really grade what he's going to look like. But I think the Mavericks had the better chance to win. They're the better team going into the series. They've got to do a better job defensively on James Harden. I don't expect Harden and Paul George to have the similar production they had on Sunday, just by the history standings of that. You know, when you look at the history of Harden and Paul George, they're usually not consistently great like they were on Sunday. I'll take the Mavericks as the team that I think will have the better shot of winning.
Couple games tonight in the association. Couple games in the NHL as well. Want to get to those real quickly. The Oilers and Kings play Game 5 of their series. Edmonton, the story of the series for them. Now, Connor McDavid's been brilliant, but we expect that out of him. Zach Hyman is the story of the series for Edmonton. 6 goals in the first 4 games of this series. has led – it actually leads Edmonton in scoring in this series so far. It's a weird mix for the Kings group of, you know, younger guys that haven't really panned out, older guys that are kind of getting on the tail end of their career. They took a game in Edmonton, haven't won a game since. Kind of did actually the same thing that the Nashville Predators have done. Won game two on the road and proceeded to lose both at home in L.A. So Edmonton is up 3-1 in that series. They were favored going in. They look really good. Their young goaltender, Sam Skinner, has actually been a nice surprise as well. Only given up, I think, 5 or 6 goals across the 4 games, something like that, in this series. So it's been a really good series for the Oilers. They are the nightcap tonight, the later game. I have not watched as much of this series just because they're on about the same time as the Predators have been. Mm-hmm. But still, nonetheless, very talented Edmonton group, still led by McDavid and Draisaitl and all the guys they've had for a long time, looking to get to the second round. The winner, actually, of this series faces the winner of the Canucks and Pred series. So it is notable for Nashville and Vancouver. This game tonight could determine your second-round opponent. Zach Hyman, again, looking to continue that streak there in Edmonton. And on the other side, game already underway. And this has been the most weird playoff series almost in any sport that I think I've ever watched. And it's the Vegas Golden Knights on the road tonight in Dallas facing the Dallas Stars. Every road team has won the game in this series. Vegas went on the road to Dallas, won games 1 and 2. Dallas went on the road to Vegas, took games 3 and 4, and all of a sudden now it's not a battle of which road team wins first to put the series in jeopardy. It's a battle of which home team wins first to put the series in jeopardy. I don't think I can remember a time when a home team did not win a single game in a playoff series in the first 4 games. Sure it's happened. It's not often.
Very rare, though.
It's not often. Dallas, especially, was very good at home this year. So to see them lose the first two, that's really surprising. Vegas, obviously, defending the Stanley Cup this year, was also very good. They were notably good at home in the postseason last year. Lose both to Dallas. I mean, really weird games. That game's underway already. The story of the series so far for Vegas has been goaltending. Logan Thompson comes in off the bench to start the postseason and completely shows up and shows out. He has come to life much like Aiden Hill did last season for them on their way to a Stanley Cup run. That has been the notable story for Vegas. For Dallas, it's the veterans. This is kind of a team built like the Preds. Matt Duchene is on this team. Jamie Benn's still on this team. Joe Pavelski is still on this team. Tyler Seguin is on this team. This is a team full of veterans that have been around. They know the playoffs. This group has been very experienced in the postseason already with a ton of guys with playoff experience, even on this team in the past, including goalie Jake Oettinger. Great stuff for them so far in the playoffs, and a really just a fun series to watch, a weird series to watch. Two games in the NHL that could decide a series, one that could end a series, one that could kind of flip the series on its head if Dallas is able to win. I'll phrase it this way. We'll ask another fun question here before we go to the break. Can you remember a playoff series as weird as Dallas and Vegas with just the road teams winning or something weird happening in the series?
Trying to think. My mind immediately goes to the NFL or the NBA, but it's hard to remember how each game worked out.
Right.
I guess last year, I mean, this is not as similar because, you know, the Stars and Golden Knights are tied 2-2, but like the Heat Bucks last year, the Heat going into Milwaukee and winning games, despite, you know, Milwaukee was healthy in the beginning of that series. The Heat coming in as an 8 seed, going in and winning games in Milwaukee, I thought was great. Does one come to your mind?
It's tough. I'd have to probably think about it. Preds Jets in 2018 felt like it was one of those. Winnipeg took either one or both in Nashville. Nashville took one in Winnipeg. That was a weird series. Other than that, I'm trying to think.
The Clippers-Mavs series is always is like they've had a bunch of series before where it's kind of back and forth and right, the home team does not handle business at home.
I'm sure the Suns have had a couple the past couple years too with their finals runs and such. I'm blanking. I want to say the Pelicans series was like that a couple years back where I'm pretty sure the Pelicans walked into Phoenix and won one of those two games, at least one of those two games, and then Phoenix won both in New Orleans and immediately took the series. But just weird, kind of a weird stat, one of those weird series where just the home team just cannot seem to find a win.
Yeah, which sucks for the home team.
sucks for the fans paying playoff prices to get in and watch their team lose both games.
Yeah, it's, speaking of playoff prices, last night the cheapest ticket to get in Madison Square Garden for the Knicks game was $625.
Oh, man.
And I saw another tweet, quote tweeted it, and someone said, yeah, for $625, you can come play the final 7 minutes for the Cavs against the Magic. All right, that's In the News with Dawson Wise. When we come back, we will wrap up a Wednesday edition of Overtime. I'm already getting ahead of myself when we return here on Overtime.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
White Claw is taking hard seltzer to new heights with White Claw Surge. At 8% alcohol, White Claw Surge is a stronger wave of refreshment that doesn't compromise on taste. Available in four bold waves of flavor like ripe blackberry, citrusy blood orange, zesty natural lime, and tart cranberry. Check out your favorite retailer in-store and online for the White Claw Surge Variety 12-pack and 16-ounce single-serve cans. White Claw Surge. Please drink responsibly.
We make it easy to save money. Get access to thousands of discounts on shopping, dining, and travel with the CNB Plus Perks account. It's a powerful new way to save money with roadside assistance, cell phone protection, identity theft protection, and credit monitoring. Banking at CNB has its perks. Call or stop by a branch for more details.
Citizens National Bank. Banking never felt so good.
Member FDIC.
Are you ready to flash that dazzling smile? Well, look no further than Knoxville Smiles. Our experienced team is here to give you the care and attention you deserve. From routine checkups and cleanings to advanced cosmetic treatments, we've got you covered. Say goodbye to dental worries and hello to a confident, radiant smile. Don't wait any longer. Schedule your appointment today and unlock the power of your smile. Call 865-539-1776 to schedule your appointment today or just visit KnoxvilleSmiles.com.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Back here on Overtime, a bootleg version of...
Well, I think it's just the bass got taken out or something. That was weird. I don't know.
I like that. All right. Suns owner Matt Ishbia.
Oh, boy.
A impatient tech guy that decided to buy the Phoenix Suns in 2022. And his first move was to kick to the curb and trade away the young core that had formed the Suns over the prior 3 to 4 years. The same core that was successful in the bubble, carried that success on to the 2021 NBA Finals where they were ousted by the Milwaukee Bucks. And Ishbia arrives the next season and decides to trade the young core of McCall Bridges and Cameron Johnson in exchange for Kevin Durant. And the summer ships off DeAndre Ayton. And as a result, they can't pay their other really good pieces around them. Chris Paul was a good piece during the time with the young core. Now, not so much. But guys like Jay Crowder and Cam Payne, big time role players that they could not afford because they decided to add Bradley Beal. So today are the exit interviews for the Phoenix Suns, where Ishbia has been entertaining the questions that we've all been thinking, saying, quote, "I love that people are frustrated that we didn't win an NBA championship, because guess what? So are we." That's a good quote. No duh there. but when asked about the big three, you know, we have great leaders. The coach is a leader, but we have Devin Booker, who he's saying is a leader. But most people will argue, and I think James and Frank will agree with this, you want the ball in the hands of those big three as much as possible when asked about having a true point guard. My argument yesterday, I guess 2 days ago, was that this team was a pickup squad, not a basketball team. No true point guard, no chemistry, no identity. Teams that don't have an identity don't do well in the NBA. That's why the Pistons are selling pizza at this point. That's why the Milwaukee Bucks are, you know, about to get, hopefully, beaten by the Indiana Pacers. And Matt Ishbia, a guy that has no background in fielding a basketball team, James Jones does and did a great job with it. He comes in impatient, tries to microwave success and instead of letting it bake in the oven like the Suns were doing, and doesn't think there's a problem. Saying, quote, "We're in great position." Not a good position, a great position. They're not in great position. They don't own a draft pick for the next 6 years. 26-19 when their big three plays. 15 turnovers a game this season, 25th worst in the league. That doesn't sound like a great position. Oh, and you can't trade Bradley Beal, the most expensive guy on the contract, that just had 9 points and fouled out in a win-or-go-home game four. What do you make of these comments as a Suns fan?
It's incredibly tone-deaf, because you're clearly not watching the basketball team you own if you say, well, oh, we're fine. We're not fine. It wasn't fine during the regular season. We all kind of knew going into the postseason that there would be some problems, but we figured, okay, Kevin Durant the postseason, he's really good. Bradley Beal hasn't seen enough of the postseason for us to know. No straight to him, because he was playing for the Washington Wizards. I'm not saying he could control most of that, but still, again, a guy with not much postseason experience, but he's a star. He'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And Devin Booker, I mean, he's been, you know, the playoff ace for 3 years now. Every playoff run, he's the guy. So we're like, okay, well, we're going to have some problems. You don't have enough depth probably to make an extended playoff run, but you can win a series or two. And when you get the draw against Minnesota, you're like, oh, okay, that's a good draw. That's the best draw, actually.
Yeah.
The best draw you could have gotten between that, the Nuggets, and the play-in, that's a pretty good draw, all things considered, to move up out of the play-in, get the sixth seed. Now looking back, you know, being the five seed probably would have been better if you got to play the LA Clippers. I think that would have ended up being a better matchup. Now, we didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
But it was the best matchup, all things considered. I don't understand why you think it's not okay to have a point guard, because clearly that was most of the issue. Now, you got great play from Grayson Allen. Credit to him. But when he goes out, you're starting Royce O'Neal at the point guard spot. No straight to Royce O'Neal. Perfectly good bench player. Not a starter in a postseason series.
Fragile team.
Not a starter in a postseason series. You didn't have a bench at all. You can't rely on – Devin Booker you can rely on, but you can't rely on guys that are on the wrong side of 32 to be able to play 42 minutes a night in a playoff series. It's not going to work. So it's incredibly tone-deaf and makes you question – because for a while you kind of were like, okay, Ishbia is doing a pretty good job. I liked the Durant trade a lot when he made it, and I trusted that was a good move. I liked the Beal trade for a little bit, and then I realized, oh, this is not going to work. This is too many stars. You weren't able to get enough around that, and it comes to fruition. And now for him to say we're in a great spot,
yeah,
tone deaf at best, negligent at worst.
Yeah, I didn't like the Kevin Durant trade. I hated the Bradley Beal trade. I had a feeling that the season would end the way it did, and now your owner, your leader, the guy that put all this together, I'll give him credit. He still has confidence in his decisions.
For some reason.
But being that tone deaf is not a good sign, not a good feeling if I'm a Suns fan. All right, that's going to wrap it up here on Overtime. We appreciate you listening. We will be back tomorrow to break down the NBA games, NHL games, and any more Vol news. We'll see you again tomorrow here on Overtime.